another disciplinary investigation into Attorney General Todd Rokita, Rokita draws a Democratic challenger, plus predictions of a quieter session, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 1st, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Attorney General Todd Rokita is under investigation, again, by the Indiana Attorney Disciplinary Commission, weeks after the state Supreme Court publicly reprimanded him. The new inquiry, first reported by the Indiana Citizen, is over Rokita's reaction to that public reprimand. A few weeks ago, the state Supreme Court said Rokita violated professional conduct rules in his remarks about Dr. Caitlin Bernard after she provided abortion care to a 10-year-old Ohio rape victim. In a statement following the reprimand, Rokita said he admitted to the misconduct to save a lot of taxpayer money and distraction while maintaining he did nothing wrong. New complaints filed with the State Disciplinary Commission argue that response contradicted the affidavit Rokita agreed to in which he admitted to the misconduct. In a statement, the AG's office says Rokita cooperated with the original investigation into his remarks about Bernard and that he said publicly that he's learned from the situation and, like everyone, can always do better. The commission can ultimately dismiss the new complaints or advance them for further investigation. Will this latest investigation produce a different outcome? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Lindsey Haake. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Now, first, Lindsey Haake, the disclaimer for this topic, and especially the next one, is you are working for Destiny Wells, the new Democratic candidate for Attorney General. So with that in mind, the Supreme Court agreed to the previous reprimand by just a 3-2 vote. Chief Justice Rush and Justice Goff felt it warranted harsher punishment. Was Rokita's reaction to that enough to change at least one of those three minds?
I think it is. And frankly, I don't understand how he's not considered a perjurer after this. That's just my take on this. We'll see what happens. But the Attorney General has placed the Supreme Court in a terrible position. It really has. Frankly, I think we can do better for jurisprudence in Indiana. I think Indiana can do better than this. I think Todd knows he can do better, and he should.
It's not unprecedented for the Indiana Supreme Court to go back and punish attorneys a second time or go back and revise, essentially, their previous decision because the attorney had a negative reaction to their original decision in a disciplinary case. Was Todd Rokita asking for trouble with that statement?
He's always asking for trouble. He tries to position himself as the victim of the elite. The reality is that all of his wounds are self-inflicted. The establishment isn't shooting at him. Let me just spoil it for the hard right. He's shooting himself all the time. Stop. Get out of your news cycle. Take the disciplinary action and move on, and quietly move on.
Yeah, it was a public reprimand.
No one's
reprimand.
Paying attention until you do this.
Yeah. And
it's
also,
unbelievable.
That was the other thing that struck me. You know, you just pointed out he's always, saying he's fighting against the elite. And that's not an uncommon refrain in politics now, especially. But for a guy who has
only
been
works
in
for
public,
one guy, though.
Yeah. But for a
and
guy.
It's the top guy.
For a guy who has been in public elected office for multiple decades now, who has only spent a couple of years not in elected office over the past 20-plus years, or 20 or so years, at what point are you the elite, the political elite? Wouldn't Todd Rokita, former Indiana Secretary of State Congressman and now
candidate for U.S. Senator,
candidate for U.S. Senator,
candidate
for governor,
now
Attorney General. Wouldn't that qualify
Sounds like
one as
you're
elite?
Serving up a hefty dose of fake news there, my friend. Yeah, but of course he would in terms of elective office. And you're right. There is a long history of people saying, I'm the outsider. I don't like just the same old, same old. But he is the same old by definition. And I think you're right. I also think Mike hit it right on the head when he said, but for this, nobody would be paying any attention. The question is, would he be satisfied with nobody paying any attention? In a very real sense, I think he thrives on this, and we've seen it again with various parental bills of rights and various sorts of pro-religion, anti-state. It's abortion certainly has been front and center, but any number of issues. And you could say with empirical data and objectively he's wrong or outside the norms, at least of tradition, if not the law in a lot of these things. But so what? Because as long as he can generate the notion that the elites, whether he may be one or not, and I think we can stipulate, at least in terms of elective office, he is, he can still turn that into somehow being the persecuted one. Yeah. And I guess we've seen at all levels of government that people don't do their homework enough to decipher what's true and what's not true, and they take that kind of messaging to heart and believe it at face value.
Let's say the Indiana Supreme Court does take a look at this. It might not rise to that level, but let's say the Indiana Supreme Court does get another look at this and they do decide to punish him more harshly with some sort of potentially suspension of his license, even for a short period of time. That would be the second attorney general in a row who's had that happen to them. The last person, I think his actions were, I would argue, much more serious. When you're talking about battering women, that's different than just attacking someone with words, I think. But that got that person out of office. If he is reprimanded by the Supreme Court any more harshly, does it matter to his electoral prospects?
Yeah, I think it would have to matter some, as long as his opponent can use it against him in a way that will help, and we'll talk about that later, obviously. I mean, at this point, I think he was honestly a little surprised at the reaction that public statement got that he gave. It was so strident. And up until now, he's saying he learned, that had never come out of his mouth. He never admitted publicly that he did anything wrong. He may have signed some secret affidavit that we can't see, but we can't see it. And so he had never admitted he'd done anything wrong. He had never shown remorse. Suddenly, now that more things are maybe coming down the pike, he's at least saying, well, I can do better. So maybe he's learned a little lesson. I don't know.
Well, speaking of challengers, Democrat Destiny Wells announced recently she is running for Indiana Attorney General next year. Medical privacy, workers' rights, and ethics are the three areas Wells focused on in her campaign launch. Current Attorney General Todd Rokita has aggressively pursued health care providers over abortion and gender-affirming care, and Rokita recently became the second consecutive AG to be sanctioned by the Indiana Supreme Court. Wells, a former deputy attorney general and military veteran, says the office has fallen short of what Hoosiers need.
And that we are not using the office simply as a platform for national talking points. We want to get back to serving Hoosiers.
Wells says for this campaign, she will build on the statewide network she established last year in an unsuccessful bid for Secretary of State. She says she'll focus on reaching voters who cast Republican straight-ticket ballots and have to spend a lot of time fundraising.
I have to spend a lot of money to meet people at their nose, basically. And that is just the reality of where our electorate is and how engaged they are.
Democrats haven't won a race for attorney general since 1996. Mike O'Brien, informed heavily by what we just talked about in the first segment, but does Destiny Wells legitimately have any shot at this?
I don't want to sleep on these. Whenever I get that question, as a Republican who's run a lot of campaigns and worked, I'm never like just trying to assume we're going to just keep doing what we've been doing the last 20 years. But for the last 20 years, and especially the last four or six, we've twisted ourselves in knots trying to convince me and others that the state's changing, that the suburbs aren't as red as they used to be, and then what happens? We win by 20 points, we win by 15 points, we win by 10 points, especially in these. And the problem with this office, it's typically an easy, if you're going to go, if you're a Republican voter, you tend to vote mostly Republican. The administrative offices are like an easy scratch for you. Or the other, if you're going to scratch on president, this is an easy one for you to come home on as you're kind of going down your ballot and vote and putting together mostly a Republican, you know, experience. So maybe if the environment goes completely haywire, I don't see a monumental shift in how Indiana's going to vote in the presidential race, much less all the way down to, you know, attorney general. We went through this exact same exercise with Diego, with much higher profile issues that he was having in an environment that was pretty clean and could be focused on just the Secretary of State's race. And that's not the environment next year. It's really crowded.
And that's precisely the question for you, which is, Diego Morales was arguably an even weaker candidate than Todd Rokita will be next year, and 15 points, I think that margin of victory was?
I think, yes, that's accurate, but you also have to remember Destiny took Hamilton County, and I mean, we had some great inroads on that race. So at the same time, though, while working on that race, we saw the drama that Todd Rokita brought on Indiana in the national press, the global press even, with his comments about Caitlin Bernard. And so, Dr. Bernard, so when I was trying to break through in that conversation working for Destiny in that race, it was tremendously hard to move past in the middle of July when you've got literally the Daily Mail and other outlets taking on this conversation regarding Todd Rokita's comments and stance on Dr. Bernard. So I disagree completely that there's not this radical movement to remove Todd Rokita out of his seat. I've heard anything but that.
It's an environment in which there's going to be a lot more people going to the polls than in an off year, in a presidential year. That's just the way the math breaks out. But you also, in Indiana particularly, you have a president and a U.S. senator and a governor's race ahead of attorney general on the ballot. Will that make it harder for Destiny Wells to break through?
Absolutely. But I'm not convinced that it's not possible to get him out at the convention. I think we're looking past the Republican convention, and if a solid, reputable attorney steps up, a Republican steps up, I think he could be taken out by fellow GOP voters, which would then, I think, would hurt Destiny, actually, because then she wouldn't really have anything to run on.
You've been to a Republican convention.
I have. I said possible if there was a good, reputable.
Well, I mean, but that's how Curtis Hill was not the nominee in 2020.
That's exactly how he was.
Sure. At the same time, in terms of, I mean, money. If she has a lot of money, it will make it easier to get this more in front of people's faces, which she talked about in her announcement. I just talked about how hard it is to get attention when you have so many other races above you. But if you're a Democrat donor in this state of Indiana, and you're looking ahead to 2024, you're looking at the Senate race, you're looking at the governor's race, depending on who the Republican candidate is there, and the attorney general's race, assuming Todd Rokita is the candidate, where would you want to send your money?
Well, I'd want to probably put it where the best chance or opportunity is. And normally you would say you get your bang for your buck up ticket with those higher profile races. But if, in fact, there appears to be a crack, in fact, in Todd Rokita's incumbency and his bid for reelection, maybe that is a place. Because this is more than just a ceremonial office. I mean, this is an office that has, as the other, we'll call them other state offices go, this is sort of in a category of its own.
As we have seen under Todd Rokita as Attorney General. He
right.
has a lot of influence on
and
legitimate
so,
policy.
And that may have rubbed some Republicans wrong, to Nikki's point. So, but the problem is for her, as long as Indiana enables voters to go into the polling place and just if they've had a bad day and they can't expend the energy to actually use their finger multiple times or press the button and just want to do it once, that's tough, ticket voting. But at the same time, Hoosiers historically, well, not recently, but back in memory, always sort of had this inherent sense of a check and balance, and they'd always stick, when it was Democratic, and that's really going back, controlled off-state offices, there'd sometimes be a Republican one stray, and then the opposite. So who knows? I wouldn't say it's an impossibility.
All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, can Democrat Destiny Wells defeat Attorney General Todd Rokita in next year's election? A, yes, or B, no. Last week we asked you whether the latest stopgap spending bill, or actually 2 weeks ago, it was the latest stopgap spending bill to avert a federal government shutdown, a win for new House Speaker Mike Johnson. 51% of you said yes, 49% said no. That's one of the closest polls we've ever had. Fascinated by that one. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indiana legislative leaders are tempering expectations for the upcoming session of the General Assembly, eyeing small changes to existing policies as their session priorities. Both Republicans and Democrats mentioned reading proficiency, truancy, and health care costs as areas of focus for the 2024 session, and House Speaker Todd Houston noted that last session featured significant legislation on many of those issues.
We need to allow things to be able to be implemented, maybe fine-tune some things.
Democrats want to push further, particularly on issues like child care, and Senate Democratic leader Greg Taylor continued to advocate for cannabis legalization, especially as three of four surrounding states now have legalization in some form.
If we don't we're going to find ourselves behind the eight ball, and the other states are going to, I think I read something that Indiana's on a contact high now.
Republican leaders said cannabis legalization in 2024 is unlikely. Nikki Kelly, do you expect 2024 to be a return to at least what the Republican leaders think of as a more normal short session?
I don't even know what's normal anymore. I mean, I know, like, here's what I think about the short session is. I don't understand just sort of tossing it away and not using that as an opportunity to move forward for the state. You know, Mitch Daniels would say that a lot. Like, he wasn't going to sit on any short session. And you know what he did in short sessions? They leased the toll road. They did right to work. Yeah. I mean, you can still do big things in short session. And I don't like going in with the idea of, we're going to start a few days late. We got to get out early because we got to run for election. It just makes it sound, I don't know, it makes it kind of icky.
It's a big election year. Not that realistically many lawmakers probably face significant chances to lose in either party in the general elections, the way the maps are drawn. Ann's not here, so I had to get in the gerrymandering comment.
You mean fairly and accurately based on the population and how they vote?
Whether you think they're gerrymandered or you think they're fair, they aren't competitive.
Correct.
Given that.
There's a lot more Republicans.
Yeah. Given that, can you afford to go, let's not do very much?
Nobody's going to do that. I mean, come on. When's the last time at one of the preview events or at Organization Day you heard leaders say, this is going to be a watershed session? We're going to do all this. No. I mean, this is gamesmanship. You say we have modest expectations. Not much is going to happen.
Lowering expectations.
Even in a budget year, you don't hear we're going to turn the state's finances on its head. It's going to be we're going to maintain a balanced, honest budget. Okay, that's what the Constitution says. I hope you will. And so this is just part of the shtick. I've never heard anybody say it's going to be a blockbuster. But nope, you have lawmakers, and it's precisely because of the election, I would say, that it fuels the likelihood and advances the likelihood that there will be rancor, if not, there'll be sparks, if not actual action or outcome, because people will want to make sure voters know I wasn't just a shrinking violet. I was there fighting for you.
Yeah, to that end, if you're Todd Houston and Roderick Bray and you're putting forward your list of priority legislation and you're not making big swings at things, I would argue the reading proficiency might get spicy. Mm-hmm. And it's an important issue. There's no doubt about that. But if it's a more abbreviated agenda, which is what Todd Houston has promised, aren't you opening the door for a lot more nonsense to fill that vacuum?
It's my 24th session working around the legislature, and this is a constant narrative in the short session that we're not going to do a lot. They fill whatever time they have, they're filling, and they're going to. And so what we observe is that what that looks like procedurally is okay. Well, you've shaved a week off the front end. You've tried to short the field procedurally, so you only give people two weeks of committee hearings. Yeah. Well, now you're doing a lot more amendments. You're doing a lot more omnibus legislation. You can only introduce five bills, right? Now we have five bill limits in the short session. Okay, well, those bills are now going to be hundreds of pages long. Or there's going to be floor amendments that maybe aren't vetted the way they normally would be in a long session. But I do think the appetite for we're also in this cycle where we've had huge long sessions followed by pretty modest short sessions. We did that in 19. We did it in 21. We had a huge session this year in 23 in like every issue area. If you just look at how the interim study committee process this year was the lightest I've ever seen, yeah. You know, so all that points to maybe it'll be a little lighter. But again, I mean, they're going to do something while they're there.
Well, to that end, I think, is there something commendable to the Republicans going, we just did, you know, we spent all this money on public health, we spent this money on mental health, we're doing all this stuff about remaking high school, we just did all these big things. We have to allow them a little time, a little breathing space to start to work. Is there something to that, at least?
I'm with Nikki. I think it's kind of chintzy to downplay any legislative opportunity to make change for Hoosiers. However, to say that we're not going to do significant things, not to poo-poo the conversation regarding any school issue, frankly, but to come back to what we've been seeing this summer, which is an outcry over the LEAP district. You've seen an outcry in Vigo, in Vermilion counties, about carbon sequestration fallout from from the bills this past year and year before that. You've got a lot of phone calls coming into the State House that are just going over and over and over the abuse of, frankly, power that legislators have had for the past few years on these two issues specifically, even though the LEAP conversation involves more than just water. That is just sticking your head in your sand, in the sand, if you think you're not going to be dealing with significant issues this year.
And your question assumes, it seems to me, that leadership speaks for every member of the caucus, which we've seen time and again it does not. Now, of course, the Speaker does have the ability, more than any other member, to deep six things in terms of committee assignments and whether things are called up. But we've seen, even in that, with those parameters, a vocal faction, not even a small faction, but a vocal faction of the caucus can make noise and sometimes get its way over the objections of the Speaker.
We've had single committee days in the last couple of years that it hasn't been unusual to kick out 75 or 80 bills or hear 75, 80, 100 bills in one day. Yeah. So the fact that they only have 6 days in the beginning, I mean, you can still do a lot.
They'll do something. They always do something. The question is, are we going in saying we're going to do things that are going to help Hoosiers, or are we just going in to fine-tune? And I mean, they can't even find 9 bills in the House to prioritize? That seems weird.
Well, you define help Hoosiers. That's the disagreement.
Sure.
All right. Elise Nishala is Indiana's new state comptroller. And yes, for those who are wondering, it is pronounced, in this case, comptroller. Governor Eric Holcomb appointed her to that position this week, replacing Tara Klutz.
The state comptroller pays Indiana's bills and works with local governments to distribute local tax revenue. Holcomb says Nishala's experience as president of the Boone County Council and leader of the Indiana County Councils Association positions her perfectly to step into the role.
She's worked with the legislature. She's worked with counties, cities, towns. She's been about transparency.
Nishala praised the fiscal stewardship of Indiana leaders and her predecessor, Tara Klutz, as she begins the job this week.
I am fully on board to write the next chapters for our state in financial responsibility on behalf of Hoosiers.
Nishala can serve out the remainder of Klutz's term, which expires in 2026.
John Schwanes, the last statewide appointee Holcomb named, Holly Sullivan, lost her bid to keep her office at the GOP convention. Speaking about, have you been to a GOP convention?
It can happen.
All of them. I've been to all of them.
Does Elise Nishala have a better chance a few years from now?
You're saying, does Eric Holcomb control his own party? Is that what? No,
I'm
sorry.
There we
go. Pronunciation, sorry. Yeah, she has a good chance. Because keep in mind, everything's about the greater. Nothing is just what it seems. There's always a bigger issue. There are always other issues lurking. It's a mosaic, not just a one tile we're looking at here. And keep in mind, this was at the height of the concern about the governor's quote-unquote overreach amid the pandemic when he was, some Republicans thought that he was exploiting his emergency powers and being too, whatever the word is, snowflake as it relates to the pandemic, I guess. So I think there were people trying to send a shot across the bow or penalize him in some fashion. And the dynamics, I mean, he's a lame duck. He's not running again. There's no reason
by
to penalize.
By the time she comes up again.
Yeah, there's no reason to penalize him. So I don't think she faces that crosswind.
And to be fair to Elise Nishala, too, she came within 3 votes, 4 votes of being the state treasurer, basically, of certainly getting the GOP nomination for state treasurer against Daniel Elliott, one of the closest race in state convention history. You were at this event. We asked her, we noted that Tara Klutz was the third consecutive state auditor / comptroller, because the name changed, to resign early. And we asked, I think I asked Elise, are you going to stick it out?
Well, you said, do you have any concerns and do you plan to stick it out?
Yes. Yeah. And how did you take her answer?
I would say she leaped right over that thing. I mean, she basically said, look, I'm here to serve now. And, you know, that's what I want to bring to this office. But she made no comment on the future.
Is that a problem that we have these office holders not fulfilling all of their terms?
I think so. You've got good governance issues anyway in this state due to ethical concerns and controversy after controversy. The least we could do is stay in our offices for as long as we're elected. So, yeah, I think that we need to commit to what we've asked the Hoosiers to vote for us for, and that's what we need to do.
Going back to my first question, for some of the reasons we talked about, though, if Elise Nishala both fulfills this current term that she's serving out and wants another one, would you feel confident that she can get it without much controversy at the convention?
There's a lot between here and there, including figuring out which one of these five is going to be the next governor, mm-hmm. and then whether they support her.
Yeah, that's
true. Going to that convention too, but no, I think she was strong in the convention hall.
Yeah,
so it sounded that wasn't like a that was not a problem.
Yeah, she wouldn't be a new face either for a convention.
That's right.
All right, finally, quickly, the Indiana Historical Bureau posted this week a story from 45 years ago. A 27-year-old political unknown, Bill Montgomery, who announced his candidacy for a state house seat by driving a team of sled dogs to the state house after a blizzard. Mike O'Brien, as campaign stunts go, where does that one rank?
Well, we don't know. We need more information. Was it on deadline day?
Decided it was a blizzard, and then he had that. I think a buddy of his was
like,
"Why don't you drive?"
Yeah,
he got four dogs.
Does
I think,
he normally
from
ride
father.
A sled?
No,
clearly before climate issues changed
exactly.
The whole perspective. I don't think we see that anymore.
We need stuff like that.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Lindsey Haake, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.